First Up continues here on TSN 1050, streaming worldwide, tsn1050.ca, and on the iHeart Radio Canada app. Make sure to subscribe to the First Up podcast. You can get all of our terrific content, and I am not biased in the slightest when I say terrific, on iTunes on the First Up podcast page. Well, Dave, it's been a wild week in Major League Baseball. Some huge deals handed out. I mean, for the Jays in particular, Kevin Gausman becoming official just moments ago, a five-year deal worth a little bit more than $110 million with the Toronto Blue Jays. He will fill the void left by Robbie Ray, who's on his way to the Seattle Mariners, Corey Seager and Marcus Semien signing massive deals with the Texas Rangers. But there are still some free agents out there that are of definite interest to the Toronto Blue Jays, and it becomes kind of obfuscated. Wow, what a word. Unbelievable. I don't know how I dug that one out. That is impressive, I must admit.
That's right under the thesaurus.
Yes, that is my new nickname. That is my new nickname, the thesaurus. But at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time tonight, the collective bargaining agreement expires between Major League Baseball and its players. So it's becoming a little bit complicated. That was probably a better word than obfuscated, but I believe the meaning is similar. But in any case, free agency is over. There will be no deals signed, consummated between players and owners as the lockout begins. So today could be a very busy day. And we began with Steve Phillips a little bit earlier on just how busy it could be on the final day before the lockout.
I guess we could probably still see some deals. My guess is that if an agent believes that he's close with the team, he may fly his player in and have him local so that he can then do the physical and try to get it done today. You know, but if it's Chris Bryant negotiating with the Washington Nationals and it's down to the Nationals and the Seattle Mariners, he's in a tough spot. What to do, fly to Chicago and try to be in the point where he can go in either direction and try to get a physical in. So I think it's going to be tougher today to get any big deals done unless the player's already in place to be able to get the physical, or they'll let the player go to the team doctor in the town that he's playing in to get the physical for the other team. And so we'll see what happens with it. But I suspect we're going to still see some action today, even if it's on some lesser one-year deals. We've got a new flurry of free agents out there with players who were non-tendered yesterday and weren't extended contracts, so that adds them to the free agent pool. And so now there's more players out there, and maybe a few potential smaller deals could happen as well.
Steve, you mentioned Chris Bryant, and he is a name that has been circling in Blue Jays fans' heads for a long time. Now, he's a really, really good player, and there was a report yesterday from John Morosi who said the Jays were among the perceived favorites for Chris Bryant's services. Not really sure exactly what that means, but what do you make of the realistic chances that the Jays might be able to land him?
Yeah, so I think that the Mets have been in on him forever. The Giants really would like to have him back as he went over there and his versatility plays. I mean, there are reports that the Colorado Rockies have interest in Chris Bryant. Now, I don't know why he'd have interest in the Colorado Rockies, but, I mean, money talks. And so, they have a belief they want to compete next year. Maybe they'll get in on it. It doesn't seem like it makes sense. But so I think the Jays, they like his versatility, as do every other team. Chris Taylor and Chris Bryant are getting a lot of play because they could fit every day at one position or at every position every other day. And so I think that value to a manager is there. And I think I don't look at them as a favorite for Chris Bryant, but I was also, surprised that the Blue Jays name came up with Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman's deal not done with the Braves, and everybody thought he was going to go there, but the longer that goes, and what we keep hearing is that Freeman wants 6 years at $180 million. Like, I'd give him 6 years at $200 million. I mean, to me, the other thing we heard was that the Braves only wanted to go to 5 years on him. And I'm like, he's your guy. He's going to age well. He hits hard fastballs. He hits the hardest pitchers in the game. He's going to age well, and you're going to get the DH in the National League most likely moving forward. So why wouldn't you sign him to a 6-year and get him locked up? So, but the longer that goes on, it opens the door. When players start to try on a new city, you know, and their family starts to think, well, you know, that would be kind of interesting. You know, if we go to L.A., it would be kind of closer to home for Freddie where he grew up. Or, you know, if he went to Toronto, it would connect to some family ties for him. And so I think that there's, you know, you start to get people to experience it, and especially the wife and kids, then it could be exciting. And so we'll see what happens with it. The Yankees are probably in on that. You know, Scherzer probably never thought he'd see himself pitching in New York, but he's tried it on and it felt right. And so here he is. Now, so did $43 million, per year. But yeah, so I think that this is still wide open with a lot of the stars in the game.
So Freeman is an interesting one, and one I'm interested that you're surprised to hear his name surface in connection to the Blue Jays, Steve. But when you look at a guy 32 years old, I mean, I could see Alex Anthopoulos, of course, negotiating as the GM of the Atlanta Braves. I could see why Alex would be saying, I don't want to go, you know, 5 years is one thing, but 6 years and beyond is a little scary for me for a guy in his 30s. But why doesn't it worry you as much, Steve?
Well, I think that one, he's as dedicated a player as there is. Two, you know, when players hit the elite fastballs, that to me means they're going to age well. You know, it's when guys start to lose that electricity in their body that they can't hit, you know, they don't hit the hard stuff now. Then when they slow down a little bit, it's going to make it that much more difficult. But Freddie Freeman uses the whole field. He's not a guy that, you know, is a dead pull hitter that relies just upon strength. He can hit for average and power. He takes his walks. He keeps himself in tip-top shape and condition. He's a guy that will always be motivated. You know, and in Atlanta, like, that's home for him. And, you know, to me, he's a guy that should start and finish his career with one team. And it sure feels like that should be the Atlanta Braves, that he should be their next Chipper Jones. You know, so even if you're willing to go 5 years with him, then the sixth year, he's still going to be, even if he's not the same guy, and he is your guy. Like, he is. Here's the thing. If they lose Freddie Freeman, the fan base there, the joy and excitement and the karma around winning the World Series will be gone. Like, it will. They will turn. They just won a World Series. And if they lose Freddie Freeman, they're going to be mad at the organization, and everybody's going to be down about it. To me, it's just a no-brainer. Like, I would easily give him 6 years, $200 million. I think he's that caliber of a player, and the 6 year does not worry me at all.
Steve, what's happening with Marcus Stroman? I mean, we know Gausman signed. We know Robbie Ray signed. Gausman J, Robbie Ray, and Mariner. We haven't heard that much about Stroman and where he could land. Who are some of the perceived suitors for him? And would his deal be in the same market as Gausman and Ray?
Well, I had him in the same range. I had him at 5 at 110 or 5 at 100, somewhere in that range. But what's interesting is, and this is always something I would do, is I would look at the team that had him, how are they pursuing him? And, you know, it appears that neither the Blue Jays nor the Mets really had him on their list to pursue. And, you know, the Blue Jays, you know, popped Kevin Gausman when they did because they didn't want to lose out on Ray and Gausman and have to go to the next in line there. And so I think that there's a market for Stroman. The Angels are in. The Red Sox are in. The Rangers are in. The Cardinals should have been in on him. You know, they got that great infield defense, and you got a ground ball pitcher. But, you know, Stroman's not the analytics darling because, you know, today everybody likes swings and misses. That's not his game. They like guys to throw at the top of the zone and then the bottom of the zone. He really only throws at the bottom of the zone with his two-seam fastball to get ground outs. But he's really good at what he does, and he's a ground ball pitcher, keeps the ball in the ballpark, you know, gets double plays if guys get on. He competes and he takes the ball. And so he's a guy that could bring a level of predictability. I think he'll end up getting a five-year deal from someone, and don't be surprised if Texas is the team that does it.
Oh, baby. Texas loves throwing around the cash. Simeon, Seager, what's another $100 million?
Yeah, it's crazy.
No big deal, for sure. Thank you, as always, Steve. And I imagine the next 17, 18 hours leading up to the expiration of the CBA will be very busy for you. So we appreciate you taking some time for us this morning.
Always my pleasure, guys. Good to talk to you. Have a good day.
Steve Phillips, our MLB insider. I can't wait to see what this day holds for baseball. I mean, seemingly every day, just mind-boggling deals go down. And I don't know if it's going to apply today because, as Steve mentioned, Dave, it's one of those things where the physicals could be problematic, getting everything done in time. And we had Buster Olney on yesterday, and he said the middle class is just going to get squeezed out here. And if you're a player making $8 million, woe is you. But
yes,
you can't be expecting any significant raise or anything like some of the money that's been thrown around already. Clearly, teams out there are big name hunting, and Texas, a prime example. I mean, if they were to bring in Stroman and Seager and Semien, I mean, that's like $700 million of commitments to three players.
It's insane. It's insane considering they haven't been a big spending team in recent years until this big splurge of late. And yeah, it is an interesting kind of dynamic of the haves and the have-nots in baseball, right? Where there's guys who get paid outlandish amounts of money, like that Max Scherzer deal we just saw go down with the Mets for 43 schmil times three. And then there's everybody else. And I think that's one of the things this impending labor fight is about, AK, is about guys having to wait too long to get paid in Major League Baseball. I know the Players Union is pushing for free agency after 5 years. Right now, of course, it's a six-year thing where you have to be in the league 6 years. They're pushing for arbitration after 2 years instead of after 3 years, has been the long-held tradition. So we're about to see a lockout at midnight, and it's going to be over sticking points of that nature that most of us in the real world just can't relate to.
Oh, man. Don't you just miss the good old days of talking about the National Hockey League lockout, Dave? I mean, the Dreger face. Remember Dreger face?
I do remember Dreger face.
Days,
amazing.
Man, just like camping outside of like New York offices where Bettman and Daly were meeting with Donald Fear. And man, those were dark days of sports radio for sure. And you hope those covering baseball don't have to endure too much labor strife. But
well, let's hope let's hope it's not a lockout that sacrifices games. I mean, we're a long way from that.
Please, no.
But this is such a promising Blue Jays season we're about to witness. You know, it's tantalizing that we just heard Steve Phillips talk about, you know, Freddie Freeman being a possibility or Chris Bryant being a possibility. They're good. They seem like they're in the mode to at least be in on the idea of adding more talent to this already very talented Blue Jays roster. So the idea that you would, you know, be missing games when this Blue Jays team has so much to look forward to would be a crime. Let's face it.
Well, Montreal Expos fans have never recovered from 1994, right? I mean, think about that team that they had assembled, and Montreal Expos fans were robbed of seeing them in the second half of that season, and ultimately it was never the same, and ultimately the franchise moved to Washington. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with the Jays, but when you have a great team, a great roster of players, you want to see them in the field, and I'm hopeful that it's not the case when it comes to Major League Baseball and the labor war that is going on. We should acknowledge that Austin Matthews posting on his Instagram, mustache free. It is December 1st. Movember is over. He raised, I think, $150,000 for Movember. I mean, congratulations to
Good
Austin Matthews. That's an incredible accomplishment. And he raised a lot of money, and he has shaved his mustache. He looks weird without a mustache after having it for so long now.
I was going to say, he was talking about it on the road trip and whether or not the mustache would be coming back. And he intimated strongly that, yes, indeed. He shaved it on December 1st after raising all that money for Movember. But I think Movember is pretty much every month for Austin Matthews. He does love his facial hair, and I would assume it'll be growing back at a fairly high rate in the near future.
Oh, I wonder if Darren Dreger will also apply those same principles. Will he keep his handlebar mustache? Certainly hope so.
I think
great
look
for Drex.
Looks really good on Drex.
We'll ask him when he joins us on Leafs Breakfast on Friday morning at 7:45. But coming up next, Leo Routens from the NBA on TSN. And we'll talk about the Toronto Raptors' poor performance at home. Ugh. What can you attribute it to? Now, 2-8 after losing to the lowly Memphis Grizzlies last night. Yeah, Raps had some injuries, but the Grizz had some injuries of their own. And we'll get Leo's take on the Golden State Warriors. Are they the team to beat in the NBA in spite of a loss to the Phoenix Suns last night? That's coming up next on First Up. When I was walking in Memphis. Marco. Basically, anytime the Raptors play the Memphis Grizzlies, we play this song on this radio show. I think it's a very astute decision by our technical producer, Chris D'Avero. Welcome back to First Up. The Raptors were doing a lot of walking in Memphis, not a lot of shooting or making buckets. I guess the game was in Toronto. I tried to make a segue, Dave. I failed. I did my best here. But let's welcome in our TSN NBA analyst, Leo Routens, here on First Up. Hey, Leo.
What's up, fellas? You guys good?
Wow, we're doing really good. We're doing really good. Not the best performance from the Raps last night, Leo, and the offensive struggles continue. I think it's not a surprise considering guys like OG Anunoby and Gary Trent Jr. are out, but to score 91 against a porous defensive team in the Memphis Grizzlies was surprising to me. How did you view it?
You know, I can't call it surprising. I mean, you're missing, like you said, you're missing 40-plus percent of your offense. You got some guys that I'm sure are getting a little tired from carrying the load. You got other guys that are being asked to do more than they should. And some guys just aren't being very productive coming in off the bench. So, you know, it's just the way it is right now. And somehow, you know, the Raptors have to find a way to keep slogging through this until they start getting the, you know, bodies back and playing at the capability they can play at. So it's a tough time. It really is. It's a very frustrating time for a coach like Nick Nurse. You're going to try all kinds of stuff. You're going to junk defenses, different combinations. You're scrambling and trying, but sometimes it's not going to matter what you do. It's just not going to happen.
Well, you talk about some of the guys getting tired, Leo. I look at Fred VanVleet, and of course, he's leading the NBA in minutes per game. But we saw Memphis last night really go at him with a long physical defender in Dylan Brooks hounding VanVleet. And it worked, because if VanVleet's not rolling, the Raptors simply don't have a reasonable facsimile to replace his production and his leadership. What do you make of the load that's on Fred VanVleet and what it might mean this season?
Well, it's a big one, right? Because he's got an entirely different role as the sole leader of this team, and there's a lot of pressure. It's not the same guys he's been playing with, right? So he's got to help everybody get better. And when he's not on the floor, things change dramatically. And you know, I'm old school. When you used to see a team in this situation, man, you'd bury a guy like Fred. I put a fresh body on him every 3 minutes and just hound him every step of the way up and down the court. You don't see that in today's game. I don't know why you don't see that, but the fact that, you know, Memphis, you know, put some size and aggression and physicality against them, you got to do that. I mean, why wouldn't you do that? And if you're playing against the Raptors right now, I think that would be the number one game plan. Just wear Fred VanVleet out. And I got to give him credit because, you know, what he said the other day that, hey, you know, I'm leading the minutes in minutes. I'm leading in, you know, miles ran during a game and, hey, I'm okay. So if that's the least other guys can do, the least. So I think he's trying to set the example. He's not complaining. He's going through it. But at the same time, you know, it's taking its toll. It has to be taking its toll. And, like I said, teams, you don't have a every.
All right, Chris, uh-oh. You might want to call Leo back there. That's what Leo Routens, our NBA analyst. He'll join us again in just a moment. But
I guess he's on a landline. I guess he's on a landline because you don't hear that sound very often.
Exactly, landline. So those still a thing? I don't know. Do you? You still have a landline at your place, Dave?
No, I don't.
No.
You?
Perhaps the only person. No, I don't think I have since I lived with my parents like many years ago, but I think the only person I know is a landline, Steve Simmons.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course Simmons is a landline. And a typewriter. Yeah. And a horse and carriage, I think, too. Somewhere right. in the back 40.
Leo Routens rejoins us here on First Up. And Leo, I want to ask you about Scotty Barnes. And I think the big question, really perhaps the only question about Scotty Barnes after the Raptors drafted him so high in the first round of the most recent NBA draft was, could he shoot? And he has exceeded any and all expectations as far as his shooting form, at least for me. But now he is launching threes. I mean, he took 9 the other night, 6 last night. It's a very impressive development as far as the confidence aspect for Scottie Barnes, but he's knocking them down too. I think that is, if there's one positive to be gained from last night's game against Memphis, I think it's the confidence that Scottie Barnes clearly has in his jump shot.
Well, you know, this kind of goes back to the NBA and all these experts and all these scouts, and, you know, they put labels on players, right? Guy can't shoot. Well, why can't he shoot? Because he's a great athlete, and in college he could just attack and dunk on people, and, you know, he looks to pass first. Is that why he can't shoot? Because I look at a guy and I go, wait a minute, let me take a look at his form. Let me take a look at his release. All right, is he afraid to shoot? No. Okay, I don't see a problem here. I see a guy that, you know, the more confidence he's got, the more you encourage him to shoot, the more he sees that he needs to shoot because he's a smart guy, he's going to shoot. So, again, it's kind of laughable when you hear all these people say, oh, my God, look at it, he can shoot. No one said he couldn't. No, people did say he couldn't, but it wasn't true. and so, like I said, when I look at his form, I look at his release, I look at a lot of things like that, and I go, why not? And here's the great part. You're stepping out on the floor, and the coach will go, shoot. I don't know if you guys ever played, but whatever sport you play, if you got a coach that's telling you, hey, shoot. I'm not worried about if he missed. Shoot. Your confidence goes through the roof, okay? I can tell you a story from my second year playing over in Italy. I get to this new team, and in this first half, I took 6 threes, and I made 1, right? And I'm going, this is a brand-new team, and I'm looking at the coach, and every time I take a shot, he's looking at me, shoot, shoot more, shoot. So I end up averaging 27 a game on that team, because I shot it every time I touched it, because the guy said shoot. And so my confidence is going through the roof, and it changes the way you think. And so Scottie's got everybody telling him, be confident, shoot the ball, we believe in you. And that makes a big difference for a young player.
Well, speaking of confidence shooters, Leo, we're looking around the league, and last night, a team that has never been afraid to shoot. The Golden State Warriors were matched up against the Phoenix Suns. It was probably the game of the year in the early part of this season because, of course, Phoenix has been off to an absolutely hot start, as have the Warriors. Phoenix ends up winning it, but AK and I were talking earlier in the show about how impressive Golden State looks this season, obviously with Steph Curry playing an MVP-type caliber, with Draymond Green looking like a front-runner for Defensive Player of the Year, and with Andrew Wiggins, Canada's own, looking like the guy he was supposed to be when he was drafted first overall. Do you see it the same way? Are they, in your mind, as in ours, the championship favorite right now?
Oh, I really like that team. They're fun to watch. They play the right way. You know, they were really smart. You know, they had a little downtime since the Raptors won the championship against them. Injuries, all kinds of things. And what they did was they said, okay, we're not going to panic here. We're going to draft well. We're going to take advantage of this. We're going to develop some of our guys, and we're not going to wear out a Steph Curry or a Draymond Green. And, you know, when we're going to put ourselves back in a position to win again. And that's exactly where they are. And think about it. You mentioned all those guys. You know, Klay Thompson's not playing yet. He's almost back. Yeah. Wiseman's not playing yet. You've got a big man that they drafted. They've been developing. He's not back yet. So this team, as good as it is just going to get better. And I think, you know, to me, them and Phoenix both, to me, are the perfect blend of today's game of shooting the best shot you can and defending. So they're a perfect combination of old and new. And that's why they're among the best teams in the league. They play the game, they're right. And it's fun to watch. You watch these teams play, it's thoroughly enjoyable to sit down and watch a game when the way they move the ball, the way they anticipate, they understand that you're not winning if you don't defend. So many great things with Golden State and Phoenix, for that matter.
Yeah, I'm so perplexed by the betting odds to win the NBA title right now. Brooklyn, the heavy favorite, +260, followed by the Lakers, then Golden State. Phoenix is the sixth best odds right now. I don't know. I'm kind of confused by that. And for my money, you know, I value my money. I would be taking the Golden State Warriors for sure as the favorite right now. Leo, thank you so much for doing this. A big night for the Raps tomorrow as they welcome in the defending champs in the Milwaukee Bucks. So yet another tough test. And hopefully it's a win at home as opposed to a loss, which has become far too common so far this season. Thank you very much for the time.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right. That's Leo Routens. He's talking about coaches giving him confidence. It really reminds me of my grade 10 basketball team. Thornley Secondary School. I wasn't going to be like Leo's telling a story about, oh, playing over in Europe, playing for Philly, you know, yeah. in the NBA. I'm talking about Thornley Secondary School taking on like Westmount or Vaughan, right. something like that. But man, did I get red hot in the second half, knocked down a bunch of triples. When I say a bunch, I think it was two, but I was dialed in that afternoon.
Two three balls. Wow.
It was wet. The jumper was wet. A lot of people were saying it's where Steph Curry was inspired. It's probably an accurate representation of what did happen, but yeah, this is funny. You know, Leo's like, I don't know if you guys played basketball. I'm like, well, I did at an extraordinarily low level, Leo.
Yeah, but... same here. Hey, I've watched really good players play basketball. Yeah, I can exactly. say that for sure.
Exactly. I do remember once at Western when you know, me and my buddies, we used to go and play basketball all the time. And one time, the Western basketball team was there for some reason. And the clinic that those guys put on against us, we're like, all right, we'll play threes. Like, we'll take you guys on. And these guys, I got dunked on, like, so viciously. It was borderline assault. The guy.
It's not good, eh?
Absolutely crowned me. I'm, like, standing there, this little kid, basically. Well, I still am. But, man, that was tough. Very humbling. Because I thought I was, like, a pretty decent player at yeah. the time. But then you go up against legitimate athletes. And it is a completely different ball.
But yeah, that's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. I've been in some of those pickup games. I was a good enough fringe high school player to play in pickup games with really good players who played Division I in the lake. And when you see real athletes out there and you're kind of trudging around sort of possibly undercutting them because they're flying over you a la Vince Carter over Frederick Weiss in the 2000 yeah, exactly. Olympics. That's happened to me. That's not a lot of fun because you're not even worried about, you know, embarrassing yourself as much as you're worried about hurting a guy because you're so slow and unable to get off the ground and they're flying through the air with 40-inch verticals. It's terrifying that you think, I might blow this guy's knee out because I'm so useless out here. Like that could be dangerous.
More high school stories from Dave and I on the other side as we wrap things up here on First Up. We'll tee up the Leafs and the Colorado Avalanche, a game you can hear on TSN 1050. It's Nazem Kadri's return to Toronto and also Nathan MacKinnon's return from injury. He missed eight games. He has missed the last eight games for Colorado. You're listening to First Up live on your radio, live streaming, podcasting, and on demand through the iHeartRadio Canada app. So this is me swallowing my pride, standing in front of you saying I'm sorry for that night. And I go back to December all the time. Whatever we're paying 20 fingers here, Dave, is not nearly enough. Welcome
no
back
way.
To First Off. Karolnik and Festruck with you. Dave in for Carlo this morning. The song is Back to December by Taylor Swift off of Speak Now, I believe. And the song actually about Taylor Lautner, I know that, one of her many ex-boyfriends. And have you been tracking the Taylor Red re-release with the 10-minute song about Jake Gyllenhaal?
I certainly have, yeah. It's a phenomenon. I mean, I feel bad for Jake Gyllenhaal.
No,
what did
kidding.
He do wrong?
Well,
what the hell did he do wrong?
Didn't sound that Taylor appreciated the way that she was treated by Mr. Gyllenhaal at the time.
What?
But
they
I mean,
broke up like
11 years
it.
Later. I mean, you know what
Seriously.
I find the most weird about this thing that Taylor is, you know, kind of relitigating this relationship she had 11
yeah.
years ago. Taylor has like a boyfriend that she's been dating for years. What if is this guy's like watching these like music videos she's putting out, all these songs about past romances, and he's just probably like, ooh. Wow, I mean, I hope
when's
I
the one coming about me?
Well,
she's gonna profit
exactly.
off my stupidity. The one time I do something dumb, she's gonna dump me and then write a great song that's gonna be 10 minutes long and make her tens of millions of dollars. That's the formula.
Yeah, it is a hell of a song though. All Too Well, 10-minute version. Wow, true
yeah,
magic.
Not one of my favorites by her. I'm a big fan of hers. I do.
Really?
I do enjoy the songs.
What are your favorites?
Well, I mean, I'm more of a you know. what was it, the Blank Space song,
okay,
the one
like 1989. That was, I was 20 that was fingers a good nodding one. His head. He's a big
Shake
fan
It Off really got me bumping, no doubt about okay. that one. You could that was a jam. I mean, I'm not an aficionado like you two. I'm not a fanboy like 20 Fingers and 8 Kid.
20 Fingers loves Tay.
No, I'm not. I don't class myself that. But I noticed Billy Joel, you know, old fogey songwriter that I was a big fan of when I was a kid. He called her this generation's Beatles. High compliment there from Billy Joel. I'm not sure she's the Beatles, but yeah. she's damn good.
Well, I mean, in popularity, I mean, I suppose you could make an argument that it's somewhat close. Speaking of the Beatles, have you checked out that Disney Plus documentary about the Beatles? I watched like the first part. I think there's two parts. I watched the first part a few nights ago. It is unbelievable. It's cool. Why it's so cool is because you never really get the foray into, and this is a conversation that I could never have with Carlo Colaiacva. Let's just say this. I'm not sure he knows who the Beatles are, but in any case,
barely.
There is this recording of the cool video, audio, everything of the Beatles in their songwriting process. You see Lennon and McCartney sitting there writing songs together on acoustic guitar and the early formulations of some of the most iconic songs of a generation. And it's all on tape. It's all so cool. Yeah. Unreleased footage. And if you haven't checked it out on Disney Plus, I would highly recommend it if you're a fan of the Beatles or a fan of music. I mean, so cool. And
you know, it's cool. I'm not a super fan of the Beatles. How can you not appreciate the Beatles? Yeah. But, you know, I grew up listening to and know all their songs like everybody else does that grew up in that era. But I found it cool because my son, who's not a music fan at all, you know, he's a teenage kid who probably would veer more toward Taylor Swift than any kind of classic rock or the Beatles. He was kind of, you know, interested in it just because it's such a unique look at a relationship of four guys, right? Like you get to see all the dynamics between the four guys in that band. And that's what, to me, holds the thing together. You don't have to be a Beatles fan, I don't think, to just judging from my own household, to really enjoy watching the thing. Now, it's a bit long.
Yeah.
I think my son was saying they should have like an edited version for the non-super fans that don't want to see every five different versions of every song that they kind of went through in demos, which it's very complete, right? Like, I don't know how many hours it is, but it's a few hours, right? But
apparently, 20 Fingers saying it's three parts in almost 8 hours.
Yeah. So I'm with the boy on that. Like, they could probably have like an edited version for the people that don't want to see everything and make a really good edited version, because they're like, the highlights of it are amazing. Like to your point, like when Paul McCartney's kind of strumming on the bass and he writes Get Back, which is the title of the documentary, he writes Get Back in like the span of 30 seconds, and it's a huge hit single, but it comes out of nowhere. Like he doesn't even have anything, and then all of a sudden he has a hit song. It's kind of neat to see that all these years later.
Oh, it is so cool, and there are so many Beatles super fans. Like, I know Jim Taddy loves the Beatles. My mom, a huge, huge Beatles fan, so I know I was talking to her yesterday, and she is loving this thing because this is a band. I mean, like, they didn't tour forever. You know, like, they started out their career at Liverpool, and they were doing gigs, a ton of gigs, and then all of a sudden they just pulled the plug, and there was nothing. So there's not that much footage of those guys performing, and now all of a sudden we have 8 hours of content that was previously unreleased. Previously, no one even knew it existed. So if you're a fan of music, a fan of the Beatles, I mean, you can't really beat that documentary, which is on Disney Plus. You can't beat the terrific content that we provide for 4 hours every morning here on First Up either. And I think we can agree that our interview with Enoch Mwamba of the Toronto Argonauts was the piece de resistance of our radio program today.
No doubt.
You know, we're amateur. I am an amateur. I am very immature. Actually, not amateur. Well, relatively, but immature. And when this transpired with Enoch Mwamba during his interview with us this morning, I found it endearing and funny. From your Toronto Argonauts, it is Enoch Mwamba. What's up, Enoch?
What's going on? What's up? What's up, guys? Thanks for having me this morning.
All right. Thank you, Enoch.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that happened. That did indeed happen. So, you know, good for him. You know, he's getting ready for practice probably. Big game against the Ticats.
Part of the morning routine. It happens to all of us now. Most of us probably, if we're going to take a call that's going to be broadcast on public airwaves, we might want to use the mute button in a slightly more skillful fashion than Enoch did there. But he tried. Like, he did. What's up, what's up, what's up. He was trying to, as you would say, obfuscate the sound of the toilet.
Well done. Nice callback there. And our man Colaiacva, notorious at 20 fingers a rod. You could certainly vouch for this as well. During the course of an interview, or like sometimes in the segment, usually in the course of the 6 a.m. hour, Carlo just gets up and starts waving his arms frantically. And now I just know what that means.
Right.
It's pretty obvious what he's trying to intimate to us. I'm like, all right, buddy, I got you. Go ahead, do your thing. We can cover for you for a couple of minutes.
No, I was just shaving.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know, man. Like, I guess we've seen a lot of these foul-ups in the Zoom era, guys with no clothes on Zooming, guys doing various, you know, toilet-like businesses while Zooming, but it never ceases to amaze me how people have no boundaries anymore. Like, you know, doing interviews on the toilet apparently is okay nowadays in the radio business.
Well, we'll see what tomorrow brings on the show. I know Mike Johnson joins us every Thursday. James Duthie, Ed Werder, J-Lew. So hopefully all those four gentlemen, are not, near the bathroom when they're speaking to us. But, I mean, you got to do what you got to do at some points in time. And shout out to our man Enoch Mwamba for joining us. And best of luck to the Double Blue as they take on the Ticats in the Battle of the QEW. And the battle for who will represent the East in the Grey Cup in Hamilton next Sunday.
So it's a pick 'em. It's a pick 'em. Going to be a good one.
It is indeed. For 20 fingers, for a rod, for our intern Luca, for Dave Feschuk, I am Aaron Korolnik. Thank you for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Ciao. From your Toronto Argonauts, it is Enoch Mwamba. What's up, Enoch?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me this morning.